This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, it's Tessa, and I'm going to wish all you listeners a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Hi, Cam.
Hi, Jan.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Of course, everybody knows I'm always doing fantastic, even if I'm having a shitty day. I'm always doing fantastic because it's the podcast.
You have to be fantastic on the podcast.
I love the podcast, though. It's so much fun.
Could you imagine tuning in going, oh, I'm terrible. Oh. It'd be like the Eeyore show.
I know, it would. Eeyore show. I love Eeyore.
Me too.
Not really.
I like Piglet the best, I think.
Piglet?
Yeah.
I liked Little Roo.
So, Jen, tell the fine people out there in Podland what we're doing.
In case you've been hiding under a rock.
Or a mistletoe.
Today is the 10th Nightmare Before Christmas.
It is number 10, Jen, and it is a story, let me tell you.
Oh, my Lord. I cannot
Aren't
wait.
Aren't they all? You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. So, today, I have a unique story about what happens when two people come together.
Unique New York.
Toy boat.
Irish wristwatch.
Anyway, I found this case because I was actually going to do a different person, people, couple.
Case.
And it was so disturbing that I'm saving that. I'm going to do like a real one. You know what I mean? Anyway, you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
This is the story about Gerald Gallego and Charlene Williams. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Quite the horrid tale.
It's a very good place to start.
Thanks. Versus, you know, whenever I do anything, I do it from backwards to forth, like when I do tests or anything like that. I'm just saying. Some kind of metaphor for my life. Gerald Gallego was not a stranger to crime, and his upbringing, well, it was bound that he would turn out this way. He was born in 1946, while his father, whom he never met, was doing time in San Quentin. Which, by the way, San Quentin, if I ever have to go to prison, that's where I want to go, because I listen to Ear Hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So Gerald's father finally did get paroled, but it wasn't long before, guess what? Got right back into crime.
Of course.
Soon returned to prison.
That kind of happens a lot, I think.
Yep, it does. So you'd think he'd learn, but nope. When he was next paroled, he left California, landing in Mississippi, where he, in two separate incidents, killed two police officers. 1955, Gerald Albert Gallego received the dubious distinction of being the first man executed in Mississippi's brand new gas chamber.
Aw, what a lucky guy.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, with an upbringing like that, you know, Gerald's not going to turn out too good. Little Jerry. Little Gerald's mother was no better a parent than the father. His mother had been raised by an extended family that included murderers and child molesters. They always make great parents.
They do.
So Lorraine Pullum Bennett was a prostitute in Sacramento's Skid Row.
Sex worker.
And her boy Gerald served as a runner for various pimps during the 1950s.
And this is Gerald Jr.
This is Little Gerald. Now, by contrast, Charlene, whom he would meet and later marry, her upbringing was the complete opposite. She was born Charlene Williams in 1956 to Charles and Mercedes Williams. Charles Williams had worked his way up in the grocery business, advancing from a butcher to an executive position with National Grocery Chain. Do you remember National? Gotta go to Nationals.
There's
give me some bread.
Nationals around.
Is there?
That's where Steve finds a lot of Hot Wheels. Yeah. I think there's Nationals.
I think there is. I think it might be in the South or somewhere else. That's like Kroger. There's still Krogers, but you don't see them very often.
There's like Kroger in Jeff City.
Charlene was an only child and grew up in the Arden Park area, which is an upper middle class area in Sacramento. She was gifted and talented with 160 IQ, it's said, and had a talent, very gifted talent, for the violin. Violin, Jen. It was not until she started high school that her...
Oh, I'm sorry. That was Gerald's mom.
Yes. It was not until she started high school that her love for alcohol, drugs, and sex revealed itself in her character. She barely graduated high school, failed out of college, and was a veteran of two short failed marriages, all in a rather short time. Still, as we know, millions of girls had preceded Charlene in the grand tradition of teenage rebellion and all the decisions that come from that. But they turn out to be fine, right? They don't turn out to be sexual sadist, much like
Most
her,
don't.
Usually, right? Okay, for his part, Gerald followed his own tradition of rebellion, which ended up, of course, in disaster. His run-ins with police began when he was only 6 years old. And by the time he met Charlene in 1977, he had been arrested at least 23 times. He had served time at the Fred C. Nails School for Boys, the Preston School of Industry, a vocational institution, and a medical facility, as well as other various city and county jails. He also accumulated a rather large collection of ex-wives, having married and divorced five times. Five times.
Wow.
Whatever the failings he had, he was irresistibly attractive to some women. You know, they like that bad boy.
Some do. I don't. Do you? You don't like bad boys. You like crazy ones.
Thanks. Among those women was his future wife and partner in crime, Charlene. So they met at a seedy poker bar in Sacramento in September 1977.
God, can you imagine how seedy those were in 1977? I mean, consider all that
smoky,
we know.
Smoky. Probably stunk so bad. So she said years later, I thought he was a very nice, clean-cut fellow.
Well, all the nice, clean-cut fellows hang out at seedy bars.
Poker bars. Poker buddy, I did. Sorry. Within days, he sent her a dozen roses with a card that read, to a very sweet girl. They were living together within a few weeks, and Gerald laid down the law immediately. This is where, I'd be like, here we go. Charlene was to be the primary breadwinner.
Oh.
Turning over all her money and earnings to him. Now, she was a clerk at a local supermarket. So, but wouldn't you be like, okay, red flag. That's not going to work for me, buddy. Still, Charlene found him exciting, much more dynamic than her two previous husbands, and when he spoke of his fantasy of having young, disposable sex slaves, the idea sounded darkly intriguing to Charlene.
The disposable part is not very nice. If they're...
Again, red flag. Come on.
But if they're willing sex slave, I mean, there's a whole culture for that.
No,
that's fine.
I got you.
They have to be of age and willing and of consent.
Yeah, the disposable
is the bad word.
So on September 11th, 1978, Gerald was ready.
For that aforementioned
disposable sex slave. He awoke Charlene, who at this time was 2 months pregnant, right? And she was suffering terribly from morning sickness. This guy is just a nice guy, let me tell you.
No wonder he's had such a slew of wives.
He told her he had plans and she was going to help execute them. They drove their 1973 Dodge conversion van. It's always a van.
Here's
the best part. Mountains airbrushed on the sides. You know it had that little tiny window, too.
You know it did. And it was probably like a rust orange color.
I think it's probably white. I don't know. Yeah. Scenery better.
Or maroon.
So they drove to Sacramento's country.
Anywhere there's duct tape holding something together.
Yep, amen. So they drove to Sacramento's Country Club Plaza Shopping Center, where Gerald gave Charlene her assignment. She was to locate two suitable sex slaves and lure them out to the parking lot and into the van. Now, she was scared and she started freaking out. What made her more scared was that what he would do to her if she didn't comply. So soon she found two young candidates. Ugh. And when I say young, I mean these guys are pretty these girls are pretty young. Rhonda Schaeffler, 17, and Kippy Vaught, 16, were out for an afternoon of shopping and, you know, whatever fun things little teenage girls do. Charlene, who incidentally looked pretty young, approached them asking if they would like to smoke some pot. That made me laugh because do people even call it pot? The old folks call it pot, right?
The marijuana, yeah.
Devil knows. I think most kids today call it weed. Whatever. So she asked them if they wanted to smoke some pot. And, of course, the girls were like, heck yeah, because, you know, duh.
Dude, yeah.
So they followed her out to the parking lot. She opened the van, and inside, Gerald was waiting with a 25 caliber pistol. The girls obviously were shocked and afraid, but they easily complied. Gerald bound them.
You think you'd comply with a gun in your face?
Totally. Gerald bound them with tape and told Charlene to watch them while he drove. Now, we'll go back to Charlene. I got questions about that lady.
What I did for love.
They headed east on I-80 toward the Sierra Nevada mountains. At Baxter, California, they left the interstate and Gerald steered them further away from civilization and into the foothills. After finding a suitable spot, he left the van with the girls, the gun, a sleeping bag, and he told Charlene to wait there. When he returned, hours later, might I add, he told her to take the van into Sacramento, visit some friends in order to establish an alibi, then she should drop off the van and return to him with their other car, which was an Oldsmobile.
Wow. So he dropped them all off.
Well, he.
He did.
He's with the girls.
I thought, oh, okay. And
you know
Cheryl.
What he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having Charlene. A little private time.
Yes, private time. Charlene did as she was told. And when
she did.
When she returned outside of Baxter, Gerald ordered the girls into the back seat of the Oldsmobile. He sat with them and he directed Charlene to drive until he told her to stop. Along the way, he talked as if he would release them. So the girls were thinking that they're going to be released. He finally ordered Charlene to pull over and he ordered the girls out, knocked them unconscious with a tire iron, and then shot them.
Ugh.
So this was their first venture into murder. Gerald and Charlene decided, hey, let's get married in Reno.
Well, that's what you would
right
do
after,
next.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
They decided to leave California because the heat was starting to come down from the missing girls and the murder investigation. So they wanted to just stay gone for a little while.
I thought you meant heat, like it was getting to be summer and it was getting a little bit
heat,
hot.
Like,
so they wanted to go
heat
out.
Slang, Jen.
Oh, coppers.
The coppers, the popo, the swine. At this point, rather than see their daughter, Charlene, and their good name disgraced by Gerald and what he does and being apprehended and sent to jail or whatever, Charlene's parents, Charles and Mercedes, step in to assist. They instruct Charlene to, this is crazy, steal her cousin's birth certificate.
What?
And with Gerald, get a new driver's license and other documentation in the name of Stephen Robert Fail. Then Charles Williams used his business pull to get Gerald a job driving a truck for a supermarket in Houston.
What?
Who does that? Now, of course, I'm guessing that they couldn't know. I mean, I hope that they didn't know that they killed two girls, but they knew they were in trouble. I hope they didn't know that they killed two girls.
I would never do that in a million years.
Now, here's a shocker. The job, it didn't suit him. He didn't like it.
Gerald?
Yeah, didn't like it. Mm. So Gerald and Charlene.
Because beggars can be choosers.
They went back out to Reno.
Oh.
Quit the job. So for a while, everything's okay. Seemingly normal. Wink, wink. Gerald worked for a time as a driver for a meat distributor. Charlene worked in an office of another company. But soon, Gerald had that hankering. He left that job, and he began formulating a new plan. He wanted more sex slaves. He wanted new sex slaves. And he figured the best place to find them was the Washoe County Fair.
Well, I don't think he's wrong. Must have did his research on that one. County fairs are something.
14-year-old Brenda Judd and 13-year-old Sandra Colley were almost out of the fairground and on their way home when Charlene stopped them. She needed help distributing advertising leaflets in the parking lot. So she said. And would they help her? And you know what? I'm going to pay a couple extra dollars to do this for me, knowing that the girls were so young, right? Happily agreed. They were all excited.
Thank God my kids are lazy and they'd never do it.
Yeah, no kidding. Charlene said she needed to get some more leaflets from the van, and she led them over to the van. The three got in the van, and Gerald, who had been watching and following Charlene from a distance, arrived. The three got in the van, and Gerald, who had been watching and following them from a distance, was there. He was brandishing a gun. Gerald again bound the girls and headed for I-80. On the way to the highway, he stopped at a hardware store, returning to the van with a hammer and a shovel.
Oh.
Gerald drove east on I-80 for a while, then headed into the hills toward Mustang. After a while, he told Charlene to drive while he got into the back of the van and assaulted the girls. Now, all the time, Charlene's in the van and she hears this. How is that not okay? Take the gun and kill him.
She loves him.
I think she's scared of him.
I
don't know. He took his time. Charlene kept driving further into the Nevada hills. Eventually, telling Charlene she drove too fast, Gerald took the wheel. Of course he did. When he stopped, he took the girls away from the van, one at a time, using his brand new tools he got from the hardware store, killed them, and buried them. Or seemingly buried them. I'm sure it was a terrible job. Isn't this crazy?
He's insane.
And remember, there's 10 victims. We're only on number four.
I never heard of this guy.
Charlene cleaned out the van when they had returned to Reno, like the good little wife she is, right?
And so she doesn't take, besides kidnapping these girls, she does nothing.
Well, she helps locate them. That other case that I do, it's the young girl is way worse than the husband. That's why I'm going to do that one. Like she's the one. She's only 18. He's like 40 something.
But so she just locates the girls. She
helps
kidnap, but she doesn't do anything.
No, she doesn't torture them. None. Charlene cleaned out the van when they had returned to Reno the next morning. But Gerald decided to keep his little handy dandy hammer and shovel. Meanwhile, Brenda and Sandra had been reported missing from that fair, and there was some confusion regarding the two other girls who had run away to join the carnival company that maybe...
Sorry.
I know, right? Even when that was cleared up, the investigation into their disappearance didn't get too far. Feeling reasonably, you know, secure and safe and proud, Gerald and Charlene left Reno to return to Sacramento within a couple months. So things began to settle down, but as we know, that's when Gerald starts to have that desire again.
Urges. I've got urges, Charlene.
So he becomes pretty sexually intrigued with another woman. And Charlene was actually really relieved and happy because his demands on her had lessened. You see, Gerald was often impotent and
a little impotent
whenever he would have, I don't want to say normal intercourse, but intercourse, I guess.
So little Gerald wouldn't rise to the occasion with Charlene?
Correct.
Okay.
But in time, of course, the novelty of his new conquest wore off and Gerald was again seeking excitement. So at this point, he's not only killing women, he's having an affair, and she's okay with it. Charlene, it's time to go, Charlene. Come on, girl.
I don't think Charlene's ready to do that yet.
No, she's not, because we're only on number four, and we got to get to 10. April 24th, 1980. Gerald and Charlene are looking over a crowd of teenagers in the parking lot of Tower Records in Sacramento. Seeing too many cops kind of scared them, so they moved on to Sunrise Mall, which was located in Citrus Heights. Now, that's about 20 minutes outside of Sacramento. They'd had good luck at the mall with their first two victims, so they thought, you know what? Let's go back to the little plaza. Let's try that. That was their first two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stacy Ann Redican and Karen Twiggs are both 17 years old. Now, while these girls aren't totally immature and innocent, they aren't wise enough to realize that Charlene making them an offer of free drugs and a ride in a cool van would eventually lead to their death. And this was a different time. I bet that happened all the time. People hitchhike and get in cars and stuff.
Until the likes of Ted Bundy and Gerald and Charlene came along.
Even as Gerald pointed his .357 Magnum at them and offered Charlene to drive, they seemed more inquisitive than frightened.
Really?
Mm-hmm. As they thought maybe this was like some sort of game, so they tried to play along.
Mm-hmm. That's a bad game.
Pretty soon reality sank in, and obviously this was no game. Charlene headed east on I-80. Gerald crawled in the back of the van and then raped both of the girls repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Every so often, he paused to shout some directions to Charlene, you know, those damn women drivers.
Somebody's got to be in control.
After a while, they ended up at the Limerick Canyon near Lovelock. That's a mouthful. Limerick Canyon near Lovelock. As he'd done before, he walked the girls away from the van, one at a time, and killed them with a hammer. This time, though, Charlene wouldn't let him keep his weapon. She flung the hammer out the van window on the way back to Sacramento.
Why'd she do that? The one act of defiance, right? Doesn't do
way to go, Charlene, way to go. Maybe secretly she was hoping that somebody would find it. And
could be.
I don't know.
Stop it all.
Charlene, who had had an abortion the previous year, realized that she was once again pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Huh. But she, if little Gerald didn't work.
Well, he worked once in a while, I guess. Just sometimes, sometimes I work someday. This never happens. This never happens.
I swear this is
this my favorite time.
I've just got a lot on my mind.
I'm just really stressed out. I promise it won't happen again. Anyway, so she was really very nervous to tell him. She was afraid of how he would react. She expected the worst. But guess what? He was pleased she was pregnant.
What?
Mm-hmm. I know. He even
Gerald
went as
a man of surprises.
He even went as far as marrying Charlene again, this time using his Stephen Robert Fell alias. Isn't that sweet?
Aww.
He's a good guy. I'm going to marry you any name I have, as long as you help me kill young kids.
You get to pick the name you want me to marry, or you get to pick the name you want to marry.
Feeling that this new marriage helped to cement his new identity, get away from his old one, he started to, you know, kind of take things easy. But he got a little brave, started to make some mistakes. They always do.
Thank God.
The Galagos, or the Fells, if you want that name, were on a small vacation in Oregon when they spied their next victim. It was June 7th, 1980, and Linda Aguilar. Now, she wasn't exactly Gerald's type. She was 21, which is a little bit older for him, had dark hair and eyes, and she was pregnant.
Oh.
But when he saw her walking beside the highway, he decided he had to have her.
Well, yeah.
He slowed the van and asked her if she needed a ride. Linda, on her way home from a local store, accepted. Now, Charlene knew the routine by now. Gerald ordered her to drive, and then as she was driving, he would sexually assault the victim. In a while, they stopped, and Charlene wandered about the woods, killing time. That's a bad choice of words. Until Jerry was ready to go. When he found a spot,
she
got out of the van and let them
and just kind of meandered around the woods.
Yeah, she was killing time until he was done.
I got you.
Yeah, terrible wording. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But
when he found a spot, he felt suitably isolated. He took Linda away from the van, striking her with a rock and then strangling her. Authorities first believed that Linda Aguilar, who was kind of known as a free spirit, hitchhiking, pregnant, you know, they thought maybe she just wandered off. The suspicion started to mount, and they then found her body later that month. Now, here, police suspected her boyfriend of killing her, even though one witness reported seeing the pregnant lady getting into a van the day of her disappearance. The circumstantial evidence against the boyfriend weighed more heavily in the minds of the police. He had beaten Linda before, and it seemed he would be charged with her murder, or so they wanted it that way. As I previously stated, Gerald was getting a little bit more bold. And with that comes mistakes. It's only a month and a half after Linda that he was ready to do it again. He used to at least space it out a little.
Right. He's accelerating.
Yes. He and Charlene spent the day of July 16th, 1980, drinking themselves silly.
Oh, good.
Then spent the evening doing even more drinking at the Sail Inn, a bar in West Sacramento. Gerald was belligerent and boastful.
Oh, that seems
crazy, right?
For him.
And he seemed to pay no attention to Virginia Mockel, the bartender. When closing time came, though, he told Charlene, "I'm not ready to leave." You know what that means. They waited in the parking lot.
You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here.
I love that song. Reminds me of Juliet Knight. Hi, Juliet. So they waited in the parking lot, and when Virginia came out after locking up the bar, Gerald forced her into the van with his 357. But this time, instead of heading out into the countryside, he drove the van home. Charlene?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Charlene waited inside, watching TV. What?
You don't shit where you eat, Gerald. Am I wrong?
You don't dip your pen in company ink either, but that doesn't mean people don't do it.
Well, if you're going to commit a murder, you don't do it in your house.
No, you sure don't. So Charlene waited inside, watching TV. And when he was finished with raping Virginia, Gerald told Charlene to get in the van. He made her drive, and while she did, he strangled Virginia. They dumped the body outside Clarksburg. The next day, Gerald celebrated his 34th birthday.
34?
34. And he's been married how many times and how many kills? Now see, Charlene, come on, girl. Watch Dr. Phil. Like, get out of there.
Oprah.
How's that working for you?
They weren't on yet. Oprah and Dr. Phil could have saved her.
So Virginia Machel? I don't know. Virginia.
The bartender.
So Virginia the bartender had two small children and was not the not the type that would just go and disappear. So the police really took her disappearance seriously. Patrons of the bar that she worked at did report to them that two strangers, a man named Steven and his girlfriend Charlene, had come into the bar that night. Police tracked Gerald down at his new bartending job, and he admitted that he had, in fact, been at the Sale Inn that night, but he knew nothing of what had become of Virginia. And Charlene gave similar answers, told police that she and her boyfriend had been fishing that day. When Virginia's body was found, her hands were bound with fishing line.
Huh.
Which raised detectives' suspicions.
It raised our suspicions.
But again, that's nothing concrete against the couple. So the investigation halted. Often as couples that are doing this, or a single person, they hit that wall where they're going to start becoming irrational, careless, unglued, right? Mm-hmm. So Gerald...
More unglued, I would think.
More unglued, correct. Gerald would often beat Charlene. He'd punch her, right? Mm-hmm. He was now becoming even more violent. In September... Charlene moved out. Thank God, girl. Thank God, right?
Well, it's always not easy. We all know it's never easy to leave.
I don't know. If you're getting beaten and out killing people, I think
I know,
it would be easy.
But still.
I would kill him and dump him.
I would, too.
Charlene then moved out and returned to live with her parents. Gerald left town for a while. And good old Jer-Bear, he's such a lover. He rekindled a previous romance.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. During their little separation. But would that be the end of the story?
No, because you said during their separation, so I'm assuming they...
But by November, he had returned, and Charlene agreed to see him again.
Hmm.
On the night of November 1st...
All it took was a little gas station rose and...
Oh, God, it's so disgusting. On the night of November 1st, they borrowed Charles and Mercedes Williams' car.
Hmm.
And they were going to go out and see a movie and eat dinner.
Sure they were. That's until Gerald sees somebody walking down the road.
So the couple got drunk that night. And, of course, wasn't long before Gerald announced that he wanted some more love slaves.
Oh,
his words, not mine. Charlene drove as he scanned the crowds at various shopping centers looking for candidates, slaves, new friends, whatever you want to say. It took a while, but Charlene, realizing that the game was getting ever more dangerous, was ready to give up for the night and go home. But early on in the morning of November 2nd, Gerald ordered her to stop the car at Arden Fair, which was a popular shopping center. She was shocked to see that his intended victims were not two young girls, but a man and a woman. College students. Charlene pulled the Oldsmobile into the parking space, and Gerald got out. He approached Craig Miller and Mary Elizabeth Sowers, with a .25 caliber handgun. The couple, hoping that the drunken assailant wouldn't hurt them, they complied. They even kept quiet when a fraternity brother, who had attended the same dinner as the couple, was leaving, and he leaned into the car to ask what they were doing. Just then, Charlene, still in the driver's seat, began shouting at the man and pulled away quickly, but not quickly enough. The fraternity brother wrote down the license number of the car as it sped away. Thank goodness, right?
Thank goodness.
But again, we're not to 10 yet, so.
I need a hero.
Hero. Charlene drove for a while out into El Dorado County until Gerald told her to stop. He ordered Craig out of the car and shot him 3 times in the head.
Oh.
Now, seriously, why would you even take him? You know what I mean? Take the girl and leave him. Let him live.
But he knew who they were. They probably didn't know that the other guy got their license plate number. So they didn't want him to live to say, hey, this is...
So Gerald then told Charlene to drive to his apartment. When they arrived, he took Mary Beth into the bedroom. Charlene started watching TV again. And when Gerald was finished finally...
Obviously not the ID channel.
When Gerald was finally finished raping Mary Beth, he drove the two out into the county again. He shot Mary Beth and then returned with Charlene to the apartment to dispose of the evidence. So when Gerald and Charlene returned to her parents' house the next morning, guess who was there?
Charlene's parents?
Yes, but also the police.
Oh, okay.
Gerald, in typical Gerald fashion, disappeared and left Charlene to deal with
of
all the questions.
Motherfucker.
She and her boyfriend, she says, had gone to the movie the night before. They
Which boyfriend? Was it Gerald or
oh,
Steven?
Oh, it's Gerald because he's her boyfriend, but they're really married
no,
twice.
No, I know.
But, oh, yes, Steven, I'm sorry. But she refers to him as her boyfriend.
Right.
Whatever. She had told them that she and her boyfriend had gone to the movie the night before and that they had driven his red Triumph. When detectives reminded her that the Triumph had been parked in front of the house all night, she said they'd gotten so drunk she couldn't remember which car they'd taken.
Oh, silly her.
The detectives left, obviously, very suspicious. Gerald decided that Craig Miller's body, which he had taken no trouble to hide, had to be moved before police found it.
Well, you know, that's always safe to do that. Always go back and get the body.
Thank you.
That's what makes you...
Mm-hmm. He didn't know, however, that it had already been discovered. And when he and Charlene went looking for it that night, it was nowhere to be found.
Hmm.
Hmm. So they kind of panicked and they drove to Reno, where they ditched the Oldsmobile and boarded a bus for Salt Lake City. Back in Sacramento, the evidence was mounting. Craig Miller's fraternity brother had identified a picture of Gerald as the man he'd seen in the car with Craig and Mary Beth. Charles Williams, now that's Charlene's dad, told police that Stephen Frail's real name was Gerald Gallego. The bullets removed from Craig Miller's body matched those Gerald had shot into the ceiling of a bar where he used to work.
Oh, he's such a winner.
He's a sweetheart, right? Charlene called her parents from Salt Lake City asking for money, which they wired to her. Like, come on.
I hope they got in trouble for aiding and abetting.
She and Gerald moved on to Denver, then Omaha, Nebraska, where once again, she called her parents. Reluctantly, this time, they agreed to, what? Wire her more money. They told
Tough love. Tough love.
Thank
come
you.
On.
This time, they told FBI what they were doing. Agents were waiting at the Western Union office in Omaha, and they picked up the couple without a struggle.
Good.
So here we go. This is kind of unbelievable, I must say. Now we're going to get into the trial and how that unfolded. So, of course, Charlene struck a deal. It took a while, but eventually the prosecutors arranged for her to plead guilty to the murders of Craig Miller and Mary Beth Sowers. In exchange for her plea and her testimony against Gerald, she was given a sentence of 16 years and 8 months, which was the minimum time to which she could be sentenced in California for first-degree murder. Say what? I know she didn't really murder these people, but she was right there.
She found them. She gathered them.
She helped make it happen. She's just as guilty as he is.
I agree.
She struck a similar deal with the Nevada authorities, pleading guilty to second-degree murder of Karen Twiggs and Stacy Redican, and receiving the same sentence. Oregon prosecutors decided to let California and Nevada take the expense of the investigation and trial, and they declined to file charges. That always surprises me because as a parent, I would be hurt. I'd be like, no, you want to save money? I mean, yeah, they're going to prison. I would still want to rightfully have them be responsible for the death of my child.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Authorities in California were not happy with the plea bargain and tried to have it withdrawn. But in late 1983, a Sacramento County Superior Judge dropped the charges against Charlene in the Miller and Sowers deaths. With the fighting over, it was now time to prosecute good old Jerry. Now Gerald, with this cockiness, he decided to do what? What do you think he decided to do in his own trial?
I would think he wants to play lawyer.
You are correct. Ding, he wants ding, to ding, be ding, his ding, own ding, attorney. Ding, ding, ding. So the adventure, or shall we say misadventure, in defense began.
It always works, too.
Right, totally.
I mean, always.
Began with him deferring his right to an opening statement, right, until after the prosecution had made its own statement. He further damaged his own case and credibility by offering no cross-examination of Mercedes Williams, who was one of the prosecution's most effective witnesses. He did, however, cross-examine Charlene for...
Of course he did.
6 days.
It's what? Because he thought he had control over her.
No, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens with men with little, not working penises.
So during the prosecution's questioning, Charlene had offered a defense for her lack of action. She said she'd been afraid of Gerald, which I'm sure she was. He beat her. He threatened her. He demanded. He kept all her money. And, you know, whenever she would go against him, he would call her terrible things. He'd say that she wasn't the girl with a heart. Right? And she fell for that. During his cross-examination of her, Gerald tried to undermine her credibility. He offered evidence of a love note she'd written him after their capture. He portrayed her as an unstable drug addict and got her to admit to a lesbian affair.
Oh, my God.
While she was in jail waiting.
Not that.
Right?
Not
yeah. That. After all of that, you think that's bad? Like, really? You just killed all these people. Unbelievable. On the final day of the stupid questioning, Gerald came to his point. Charlene.
Did he have a point?
Yeah. Okay. Wait till you hear it. Charlene. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. He called her Mrs. Gallego. Isn't the bottom line of your deal to blame both these murders on me to save yourself? Charlene, of course, said, no, it's not.
What?
That's all she said. No, it's not. So it seems kind of unthinkable that Gerald could do anything to further make himself look like an idiot, but he did. He put himself on the stand. You can't make this up. I would like to watch it, though. He allowed the prosecutors to catch him in countless lies and inconsistencies. In his closing statement, he admitted he'd taken a legal licking. That's his word. But asked the jury to believe him on faith, if nothing else.
What? Oh, yeah. I would totally have faith in him.
Thank goodness they didn't. On June 21st, 1983, Gerald Gallego was sentenced to death for the murders of Craig Miller and Mary Beth Sowers. Following the California trial, Gerald was charged in Nevada with the murders of Stacy Redican and Karen Twiggs, Brenda Judd, and Sandra Colley. As Judd's and Colley's bodies hadn't been found yet, the state's best evidence was in the Redican-Twiggs case. Charlene had led the investigators to...
The hammer.
No, yeah, you'd think, right? No. It was a white macrame rope in Gerald's car. Now, this rope matched the binding on the hands of the bodies of Redican and Twiggs. Gerald's second trial began on May 23rd, 1984, in Pershing County, Nevada. This time, thank God, he got a public defender. Gary Marr was to handle his case.
Well, at least he learned.
You know, I'd still love to watch that. Could you imagine that hot mess case?
How does somebody with an IQ of 160...
Ted Bundy represented himself. It's comical.
How does a woman with the IQ of 160 end up with somebody like Gerald?
There's nothing. Like, you could have walked away at any time. She could have killed him.
Unreal.
So the strategy this time was to, again, discredit Charlene's testimony. As a star witness, Charlene gave a detailed account of the last hours of Stacy Redican and Karen Twiggs' life and their moments. Could you imagine listening to that as a parent?
No.
Horrible. Marr had no more luck.
I don't know if I could.
Marr had no more luck swaying the jury's verdict than Gerald. And it took them, right? And maybe they should go in business together. And it took them just 2.5 hours to return a guilty verdict. Gerald again was sentenced to death, becoming one of the few American criminals to be put on death row in two states at the same time.
Wow.
So here's how we're going to wrap this little story up. In the years since he was sentenced, Gerald Gallego proclaimed his
innocence.
In February 2001, Gallego appealed to the Nevada Supreme Court that his constitutional right to represent himself at trial was violated when self-representation was denied at his 1999 penalty hearing.
Mm.
Attorney Brett Colvett told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that Gallego was not really interested in representing himself as much as he wanted someone other than a public defender to represent him. Not only was Gallego not cooperative during the penalty hearing, he would often turn his back on the judge. After Gallego's 1984 death sentence for the kidnap murders of Stacy Redican and Karen Twiggs was reversed on appeal, he was given a new penalty hearing in 1999. The new jury took less than an hour to sentence him again to death a second time for the murders of the two young women. So Gallego was eventually convicted of all four killings. Charges were not filed in the cases of the other six murders. That's 10. Hence, night number 10. The Nevada Supreme Court rejected his appeal. The skeletal remains found in Lassen County, California, were in fact confirmed by DNA testing to belong to those of Brenda Judge, who was 14 years old, and Sandra Callie, who was 13. The girls were killed by blows to the head after being abducted from that county fair. The remains were found in November 1999 along the U.S. Highway 395, and that's about 25 miles north of Reno. Gallego denied the killings and was eventually not tried for their deaths. His wife, Charlene, had told the police about the abduction and murder. That's why they found them.
Wow.
Charlene Gallego, known since the mid-1980s by her maiden name of Charlene Williams, she changed her name, was released. I don't think she should ever be released.
Mm-mm.
Was released from a Nevada prison in July 1997. She did not tell authorities where she was headed, but agreed to register as a felon wherever she took up residence. Mercedes Williams, her mom, raised the son Charlene had given birth to in prison, said Charlene had left California and would not be returning. July 18, 2002, Gerald Gallego, age 56, died at the Nevada Prison's System Regional Medical Center. In March, he was moved from the Ely State Prison's death row to the medical center. Cause of death was...
Did he talk himself to
death? It's just very fitting for an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Cause of death was rectal cancer, which had spread to his liver and lungs. The medical director described him as very quiet. He was reasonable about no extra treatment or resuscitation efforts. He made no final statements, had no visitors, and was heavily sedated towards the end when he died.
That's why he wasn't talking.
Yep. In the years since he was sentenced, Gerald Gallego had, of course, proclaimed his innocence, and it was thought he probably would have been executed in the next year or two had he not died. DNA testing proved that the two bodies found in Lassen County, Nevada, were those of Brenda Judd and Sandra Callie. So anyway, that's the end of that case. Charlene lives on, I guess, in this world, and who knows where she is, because we don't know.
Wow. Maybe she's listening to this podcast.
Hi, Charlene Williams.
Hi, Charlene Williams, if that is your real name.
Well, that is a real name, but she probably changed it again.
I would hope so. You would almost have to.
So here's the thing, and, you know, it's the same thing, like, if you drive a getaway car in a bank robbery, if you are with a person... Say, if you kill Steve, but I'm with you and I let you know, I know that you're doing that, so I don't do anything. I'm still an accessory and I'm still just as culpable for that crime. So I think she should have had death too. And yeah, maybe she was scared of him. And this was prior to the
second degree.
Yeah, but she's out. She got 16 years. Big whoop. And I'm sure this was before the battered syndrome came about, because that was in the mid 80s, I believe.
After the burning bed movie.
Correct. With Farrah Fawcett, who also died of rectal cancer. Anal cancer, actually, but same thing, I think. Not really. No, I guess it's not. Anyway. So that's my case.
Around the same region. Wow. He was something else, let me tell you.
People are evil. Would he have committed those crimes had he not met Charlene? And if Charlene had met another person, would she have went on? Like, was she such a weak individual that she could not say no, so she went along with him? Or was it that the two of them met, and then this is what they did together?
No, I think she wanted to please him. I think she fell in love with him and then just went along with the first one. Or who knows how severely he beat her or...
It doesn't matter.
Or totally brainwashed.
Mm-mm.
But you would think somebody with 160 IQ would have known better. I always fall back on this, but it had to be your self-esteem then. It had to be she didn't believe that she was good enough to have anybody else.
That's fine. But then when that somebody else goes and starts murdering young women and a man.
But I love him, Mama.
I don't care.
I know. No, I know. You know. But we don't know really what her situation was to pass judgment.
Oh, I can pass judgment.
Oh,
it's my podcast. Thank you.
It's our podcast.
Well, you know what I meant.
All I'm saying is I think that we don't know her situation. You and I could say that that's what we were going to do, but if we really did it, well, I think I could pretty much say that I would totally rat his ass out.
Thank you. All right, Jen, that's my case.
All right.
Ready?
Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya. If you haven't been listening, which means you're on Santa's naughty list.
Shame, shame.
We are on the 8th Nightmare Before Christmas in our little series of the 12 Nightmares Before Christmas.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
9, 10, 11, 12. Do, so, one more thing, too. Just throw this out there.
Mm-hmm.
There is the True Crime Podcast Festival that is going to be in Chicago.
Chi-town.
July.
July.
Camille and I are going to be there.
Yep.
We're really nervous that nobody's going to come see us.
And you're going, please come. No.
Really?
But I have a plan, though.
Yeah.
Here's my plan. Mm-hmm. We're going to go sit. We're going to cage it out.
We're gonna
see what's going on.
We're going to totally go.
And if it looks like nobody's talking to us, we're just going to scoot up next to somebody that's really crowded, mm-hmm. right? And we'll get pictures and it'll look like those people are waiting for us.
Okay. You would be Kimmy Gibbler. I can see you totally as Kimmy Gibbler.
Thanks.
All right. So what story episode? What are you going to? So Kim, what do you got for us today?
Takes a minute to get warmed up, Jen.
It's
so hard. Podcasting is hard.
Not as hard as math, though.
Oh, thank
the
you.
The audio is as hard as math, if not harder.
I don't even want to talk about that. It'll bum me out. All right. Oh, and I'm trying to talk better, and I'm closer to the mic, right? Everything looks good over there?
Hark. I hear the cannons roar. Is it the prince approaching? Is it the king approaching?
The rain falls on the plane, mostly in Spain.
That's not even close.
I don't know.
No, don't you remember? Hawk, I hear the cannons roar.
The donkey's cannon.
Is it the king approaching?
Marriage. We are gathered today for this marriage.
Hawk, I hear the cannons roar.
All right, we gotta go. We gotta get this done.
All right.
You're never gonna be done by noon.
Me.
This is terrible.
Yeah, they're all terrible.
So, Jen, today's case is mm-hmm. number 10, which means we have 10 victims. I already did 8, remember? It's done. It's
then
in the bag.
Then I have 9. Then I should do 9.
Yeah, I have... Wait.
Let's do 10.
Oh.
And then we'll go back and do 9.
Yeah, that's fine. Sorry, I wasn't thinking. Because I had 2 and you only had 1. That's why. Wait. Yeah, 9, 10. No, you didn't do 11. Did you do 11? Did you record 11?
I had all mine written out. All right, so we have to start over because I did day number 8, right?
Yeah, that's his 10. So Gerald Gallego, I'm sorry because I don't want to be too far away because it sounded so terrible the last time.
No,
is this okay?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, you can hear me?
Yeah, perfectly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one? Oh, yeah, he is. Oh, he's doing so good, too.
It's good.
Just, like, weird things, like food that he wants to eat and take a bath. He said he took, like, the longest bath ever.
Oh, I can only imagine how
fantastic that would be. Isn't that crazy? He was in for 20 years.
Anyway, that would be a hard time. I'm sure he has a hard time, like, acclimating.
Well, his brother's still in there, and, I mean, and it's just stuff like that he said the biggest, I'll put this at the end, but the biggest thing was freedom of choice. And it was like, you don't think about that. If I want to get up now, or if I don't, if I want another cover, if I don't, if I want to eat this, if I don't, can I eat now? Later. Charlene was an... Oh, Jen. I know my lips are damp. He had also accumulated a rather large collection of ex-wives
Spit it out. Get it out, baby. Get it out. You can do it. You can do it.
These people that get married, like, nonstop, how can you find that many people that you like enough to marry? Seriously.
If this marriage doesn't work out...
Amen.
It's done.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, I don't need to be married anymore.
Okay.
Not that I don't love my husband with all my heart, if you're listening, Steve.
I like her, so kick me. Seriously. Okay. No, don't really kick me, because you would kick me. We're what you would call maybe worldly girl. We're...
Girls of the world.
They weren't totally naive, but they weren't wise enough yet to realize that Charlene was doing something. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
You thinking?
I'm thinking it all in. I'm taking it all in.
That's what she said. Gerald was getting bolder.
Not Charlene. I hear the cannons roar. Is it the king approaching?
It's 11:04. Okay, sorry. Where was it?
Mm-hmm.